Hello and welcome to The Moment That Made Me, this time.
And that's some more fire. So it's obviously an interesting time. I'm going to have to turn this off now.
Under fire for the first time in her career, a senior officer goes on a learning journey with Afghan women.
He realised there were three women with the patrol. We then got invited into the inner compound where the close family, the wives and the children were. When the husband came over to ask a question and speak to us, the women basically said, "Go away, the women are speaking." And you are not welcome here?
The moment that made Colonel Rosie Stone was at the height of the conflict in Helmand in the summer of 2010.
I was then a lieutenant colonel. I had gone from 8 years regular service straight into a specialist reserve unit called the Media Operations Group. And I was just prior to taking over command and got the opportunity to deploy out to Afghanistan to get that operational experience just pre-command.
And what exactly were you doing in Afghanistan?
We had been working on creating a concept called the Media Pulse Team. And the idea was that we would send specialist reservists with production capabilities onto the ground in Afghanistan to capture the more positive stories that the mainstream media weren't necessarily picking up on. So I had already been out once in February prior to this incident, and I had spent most of my time, in fact, all of my time was based at the media centre in Bastion as we launched what was then called Operation Moshtarak. It was a big push to remove the Taliban from central Helmand. And it was a joint operation, one of the biggest ones, over 45 helicopters launched with a number of different nationalities, including Afghan partnership. So that had happened in February, early March. And I was back there in June, just following up on the positive stories from that operation.
So where and when exactly was this moment?
I had been doing audio. It was a radio piece that I was doing for BBC Radio Lancashire. And that's because I was actually based with the Lancashire Regiment. And we were moving out from one of their main bases down to a little checkpoint called Checkpoint Talanda on Route Dorset, as they were preparing this route between Goresh and Lashkargah.
Normally, at this point, I would ask you to tell me exactly what happened, but we can hear some of that audio diary you were telling me about for ourselves. Let's hear what you were saying at the time.
So we're just walking down the side of the compound wall, past a little bit of added HESCO baskets that protect the helicopter landing pad here.
Now we've got movement off to the tree line.
Well, we've actually just come under contact. Just a couple of bursts of small arms fire. So the guys have gone firm in an irrigation ditch. So that little burst of gunfire seems to have stopped. And we're now pushing further on down the route. Just walking effectively between two fields. Got a large compound up ahead to our left, but I can see some of the soldiers from one line based in the corner keeping eyes on as we moved on. And that's some more fire. So it's obviously an interesting time. I'm going to have to turn this off now. Well, we've made it as far as another compound, literally with about 100 metres of a checkpoint to Talanda. And I think, bearing in mind the atmospherics around here a little bit, we may be here for some time. That's our guys firing back. But we are absolutely safe and secure. A nice big compound wall, which is very satisfying.
Right, wait there, stand fast. Make sure everyone stood tight.
Wow. It brings back a lot of memories. Actually, some surprisingly good ones, hence I've selected this moment that made me. But also, yeah, I think What surprised me initially was the first little round of gunfire. It just sounded as if you were on the ranges at Bisley. It didn't feel real. But as the situation developed, it certainly felt much more real at that time.
I love the way in that audio piece you said that being behind that compound wall was very satisfying. It sounds like a huge understatement. Just wondering, what exactly were you doing at the time? What were you trying to do when you were moving down that road? What was your objective that day?
So we were covering the story of Route Dorset, which was going past that big compound, and they had set up a very small checkpoint. So you've obviously got Camp Bastion, which was the size of Reading by the time we finished. But most people operated out of forward operating bases, and then even further forward from that, small checkpoints. And so we were based out of this checkpoint Talanda, and the compound that we were moving down to was quite a large compound sitting on this new route that they were developing. And so we were trying to cover the positive story of what that route would mean to effectively subsistence farmers on that particular part of central Helmand, because one of the reasons for building the route was that they would be able to shift from subsistence farming to actually being able to take stuff to market and turn it into a small livelihood.
And you came under fire, as we heard. You sounded very calm in that moment. Had you ever come under fire before?
No, I have to say I hadn't. I'd had a burst of celebratory fire went off nearby in Bosnia, but not the same thing at all. And we had been warned there was activity in that area, but I felt more sorry for the soldiers from the 1st Battalion, the Lancashire Regiment, because I was carrying some media kits and I was carrying my water and a couple of magazines of ammunition and my weapon, but they were carrying a resupply to the people who were based down on the route. So they had jerry cans of water on their backs. They had big sacks filled with resupply, and they were really pushed to speed things up. I just slotted in behind. But yeah, it was interesting in particular for that patrol, because I not only had a female photographer from the Royal Engineers, again, a reservist with me at that time, I also had a female cultural advisor who had joined the patrol to act as our interpreter. So there were three women on that patrol, which is very unusual for that area.
And this was just the start of it. What happened next?
So we moved from the initial cover when that small burst of fire finished. We carried on, as you heard, and we then got to the bigger compound. The funniest bit for that was there was then a firefight between the Lancashire Regiment soldiers and the Taliban that were positioned in a usual spot that they took pot shots from reasonably regularly. So we got stuck in there. And because we had the cultural advisor with us who was very familiar with the area and could speak to the compound owner, and he realised there were three women with the patrol, we then got invited into the inner compound where the close family, the wives and the children were, and were able to sit. We were there for almost 2 hours talking about growing tomatoes and their own produce. Because as we'd come in through the compound, I had noticed this beautiful garden where they were growing all sorts of things. So we talked about living where they were. We talked about children. They asked, was I married? Which I answered I was. They asked, did I have children? And I said, yes, I had two. They then asked who was looking after my children. And I said, my husband. And they were very, very concerned at that stage that my children were under the sole responsibility of my husband. I just left. So I reassured them by saying that my mother was helping as well. And that was good. It was, right, okay, the mother's there, all is well. So we just had a conversation. But it was really eye-opening. And the soldiers from One Lanx were amazing. And the funny addition to it was we were slightly delayed in leaving the compound because it was a World Cup day. and the soldiers wouldn't go back until the match had finished, and they were all huddled round after the firefight had finished. They were all huddled round this radio listening to the match until the final score, and then we went back to checkpoint to London.
And when you talk about a compound, Rosie, what was that actually physically?
So in Helmand, the community lives within compounds, and there's compounds within compounds. So if you could picture it, it's Helmand Valley is actually quite green and quite lush. So at different times of year, you've got ditches either side of a dusty, almost like sandstone coloured soil with often green fields either side, and then they create these compounds with quite high walls made of compacted mud with wooden doors into them. And you go in through the first compound door, and there's a big area where they grow and they bring their animals into there. And then the inner compound within that then holds the family and their sleeping accommodations. That's where they pray, etc. So we got invited into the inner compound, and that's the safety. When you saw pictures of Operation Moschdrake, it looked like a throwback to World War II, because people were going down to the helicopter site to load up, and some of them were carrying ladders over their shoulders. And the reason they were carrying the ladders was because you couldn't go through the main door of the compound, because often the Taliban had booby-trapped those. So they would throw these ladders up against the wall of the compound and climb up and over into the compound itself. So that's where we were holed up for a couple of hours.
And it was that moment inside the inner compound, that's the moment you chose as the moment that made you. What was it about it? How did it affect you, and what did you learn?
I think there were three clear things that came away that day. The first immediate one, which you've already alluded to slightly, was I was so relieved that actually having come under fire, that I did hold it together. And the training just kicked in. The team around me were absolutely amazing. And so I came away with an additional confidence from that moment, knowing that when the time came that I actually became a soldier first, hence switching off the audio, because I was carrying a piece of audio that you had to hold in your hand, and I couldn't prepare and use my weapon if I had the audio going as well. So I had to switch it off until we were into the compound. So that was the first bit, the professionalism that I knew that I could handle coming under fire without reacting in an adverse way, which was great. I think the second one was, and the most important one really, was understanding the gendered dynamics of conflict. And it really hit me then that sitting, talking to these women with a female photographer, a female cultural advisor, and understanding after all this time where I had been told that women didn't really play any role, never mind an important role in life in Helmand in particular. Therefore, we weren't really engaging with them. And female engagement was just starting to become a concept in 2010. And women were being selected. They weren't being properly trained. It wasn't really being thought through the impact of it, because they genuinely thought women did not have any influence whatsoever. And here I was sitting with these women who were bringing up the children themselves with a big influence on the next generation. And when the husband came over to ask a question and speak to us, the women basically said, "Go away, the women are speaking and you are not welcome here." And he meekly turned around and walked away. And I watched his mother praying in the background, and the dynamics, although it wasn't the same dynamics as you would have in the West, I really wanted to know more and explore much more about the gendered and the cultural aspects of conflict. And that started me on the road to doing a master's. I then spent 3 years through Cranfield University doing a master's looking at the role of female engagement and how it could set the conditions for countering violent extremism, which was our main threat at that time. And I then started looking at the broader perspectives of conflict. And that then finally led me into where I am now as a human security advisor and understanding that bottom-up cultural and more gendered approach to conflict than the state, the more traditional state approach, and looking at supporting governments and following the political line.
And when you were sitting in that compound with those Afghan women, how were they reacting to the firefight that was going on around you?
It was really interesting. You could tell that this wasn't unusual for them. They weren't freaking out, for want of a better expression. They were just cracking on with preparing supper. They were doing okra, what we refer to as ladies' fingers, and preparing the evening meal. Interestingly enough, they thanked us. They said that they were very grateful that the British soldiers had actually bothered to knock on the door to come into the compound and wait to be invited rather than just kicking the door down and coming in. And I think that was purely because they had had some experiences previously with other nationalities that had been a bit more robust in their approach. And I think the Taliban come and go as they please. So they thanked us for that small courtesy, recognizing the fact that we were under fire. Therefore, we were really requiring that security behind the wall, that satisfactory sense of being behind a, even though it was just a mud wall, it was very reassuring to be behind it. So for them, their reaction was they were really interested that they had three women, really interested that there were three women there. And they wanted to know our story. We just shared stories.
It's really interesting because it's the moment that made you, but you get the impression that it probably had a large impact on their lives as well.
Yes. I think the interesting thing is if you can't see it, you can't be it. And I know that there was a lot of emphasis because from 2010 through to 2014, we started to develop more of a mentoring role. And I know that we were very keen to ensure that there were more women included in the Afghan National Army and the police to try and have that more gendered influence within the campaign and within their own society. I think you had to be careful not to superimpose your own values and standards and Western ways. They were fascinated with who we were. They could not get over the fact that I had two children at home and had chose to travel to Afghanistan. And indeed, my own mother had questioned why I was going if I didn't have to. But I explained that it was what I was trained to do, and it would be, my mum was a radiographer, so I just put it into perspective, saying if you had trained to be a radiographer and all you were allowed to do was pretend radiography on exercises or weren't allowed to actually do anything after you'd studied it, you would feel pretty seen off. And she said, ah, I get it now. I said, that's what I've been trained to do, and this is the main operation at the moment.
Did that experience change the way you felt about yourself, though, as a mother? Because you were obviously being questioned before you left and also greeted with astonishment in what you're doing when you met those women. Did it lead to you thinking differently about your role?
Yes, that was the third piece. So as I say, first of all, professionally, I was very relieved that I reacted well under fire. Second one, which was the most important one, as I said already, was that understanding of the gendered aspect of conflict, which then led me into a completely different aspect of my military career. But that third one that you talk about now, when I went home, at that moment, I think the wording that was going through my mind was that I felt more indispensable. So I'd done previous operations in Bosnia and in Northern Ireland. And on both of those, I was single with no children, and I just threw myself into everything. And I think at that stage, I didn't really care. And that sounds terrible in one sense, but I felt that I was dispensable because nobody relied on me, and I was having the time of my life. It was a career I'd chosen, and I think at that moment, my understanding of having two children, a husband and a family to go back to, was pretty important. And I think when I went back, I probably adjusted my style of a mum, and certainly talked a lot more with my children about what it meant to have the freedom to do what I was doing, which many girls in Afghanistan did not have. And of course, it's got even worse now with girls not able to get any form of decent education at all, and no education after, I think it's 7 or 8 years of age, no university, etc. So it's actually got worse. And for me, that even more reinforces some of the comments at the time where they said it wasn't about women, it was about stability in the area, but that we weren't to believe that what we were doing would make a difference. But actually it did. And I think when Kabul fell in 2021 and what's happened since, it's clearly demonstrated that the presence there may not have achieved what we wanted it to achieve, but in terms of creating a space for women to have an opportunity to thrive more within their own society, it absolutely demonstrated that was the case.
So do you think that this experience has fundamentally changed you?
Yes, it did. I came back wanting to study and wanting to understand more. I started to approach defence and security in a much more critical thinking way. I realised I didn't deploy to Iraq, and I think we were suffering from the impact that Iraq had, and we were struggling to have that impact in Afghanistan against the Taliban. And it reinforced to me that there must be a better way of doing this, or a different way of doing this, and understanding what does security mean to different people, right down to the individual and community level. It was asking that question, what does security mean to me? And it applies wherever. You know, when you're talking about, I then introduced the first, I was asked to take what was the first military gender and child protection course and transform it into a human security advisors course. The UK became the leading edge of that. And I did encourage the students to think critically about what security means to people. And it doesn't just apply in operations, it applies everywhere we operate. Whether it's, you know, providing a safe and secure environment in a multicultural area in Manchester during flooding, where we have to evacuate people there, right through to Estonia and threats from Russia and the situation we're in now. What does human security mean to individuals? And often it's not what we expect it to mean.
And so this moment, it led to your study, your degree. What do you think, you just talked a little bit about it, but what do you think overall it's enabled you to do and achieve in the world since then?
I've been doing human security now for 4 or 5 years now. And I think my biggest achievement is the fact that the UK Defence Human Security Advisors course is still going, despite struggling to maintain resources. It has thrived through specialist input from reservists who are subject matter experts in the area that they train on. We work very closely with humanitarian organisations on the course. And I think that's my biggest takeaway from this. The course is thriving under a new leadership now. And the students that leave the course are looking at security and defence in a different way and taking it back into their various roles across all three services, the civil service, and we also work with international students. So it does have an impact. And we work closely now with both NATO and the United Nations, who have their own human security teams set up now as well.
And if you were able to go back to that moment in the compound and revisit those women, see them again today, what would you like to say to them?
The sad thing is, I would start by saying sorry that we weren't able to make more of an impact in the time that we had. And I was very sad to see the Taliban taking back control at the time that they did. But actually, I would also like to say to them, having worked closely with a number of evacuees that we managed to get out of Afghanistan, and I've maintained close contact with both female and male students from the course that we managed to get out with their families, I would like to say that there is hope for the future, and that what they're doing in just looking after their own families and their own little piece of land there is equally as important as anything else that I've been doing. And that they're all part of the future of Afghanistan, I guess.
Colonel Rosie Stone, it's been lovely talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.